Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a nice Memorial Day weekend. Some of us were on the grind, the two-hour radio grind, like myself and Fat Tony yesterday. Other people, like the senior writer, well, you know.
Not on the grind.
Not quite on the grind.
By the way,
in the open there, bad day for Steve Hutchinson, huh? He got run over twice, it sounded like, giving it up for Aiken Adell and Daryl Smith, the rookie out of Georgia Tech. By the way, if you're going to have a day when Johnny Manziel's in the news for going to Vegas, what Jaguar more appropriate than Aiken Adell to be in the open? Aiken Adell was known to enjoy South Beach.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay, yeah. He would get away.
Well, you are too, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of your thing?
Are you kidding me? I just hop in the private plane, and I'm down there in less than an hour, really. I have no idea how fast a private plane could fly to Miami. But, yeah, that's me. Me and you, Osh. That's the kind of circles we're rolling in.
I'm kind of a South Beach guy.
Yeah, you know. Don't I strike you? Yeah. You know, T-shirt and cargo shorts, I fit right in there. You and I today, we're wearing the uniform.
Yep.
The uniform of OTAs today.
Yeah, the OTA uniform. You got to be able to get out there and experience OTAs. And it should be fun. I mean, there's a lot of storylines to go over for this. And, you know, I anticipate a very similar feeling within the locker room that we had during rookie camp, which is just an enthusiasm. And I think every year this time people are ready to get started. But you really get the feeling around this team that after what happened last year with the additions, that people are excited, the players are excited to see how this is going to play out.
I know what they're saying. I know what Chad Henne says, and I know how Gus Bradley has got that Buddhist philosophy of compete with yourself, mm-hmm. and everything will take care of itself. It's got to be. I mean, Chad Henne's been around the league. You know, he was a longtime starter at the University of Michigan, which is a football factory, mm-hmm. and, you know, this guy is not. For as much as he's not Peyton Manning, he's not chopped liver
right.
either. You've started 61 games in the National Football League, I believe, for Chad Henne. He knows that they took a guy third overall, and I know he said all the right things
sure.
and all that, but got to be a few, I don't know if butterflies are the right word, it's got to be a few wanting to go out there and kind of establish himself as the guy who's leading this football team, do you think?
Well, yeah, and there's that right now, because we assume that Henny's going to start, and I think he will start next year because they've seen what he can do. They have a known commodity in him. At the same time for him, realistically, Blake is going to start in 2015. You know, I think everybody expects that. So Chad, being a competitive guy and being a capable guy who's in that top 30, 35 quarterbacks in the leagues in some number, this year is important for him. Does he stay here after that when Blake's the starter? Does he get a chance somewhere else? If he plays very, 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 very well, maybe he's the guy somewhere. So that's a long time off. That's not on their minds right now. But in the big picture, Chad Henne certainly wants to play well because deep, deep down, yes, he wants to see Blake Bortles do well. He likes the Jaguars. But deep down, Chad Henne cares about Chad Henne's career.
And he should.
And so this is an important time because he, by all accounts, is going to get a chance to start in the National Football League, and you've got to take advantage of that opportunity when it's there.
I mean, everybody, I want what's best for the team, but they hope that what's best for the team is they're playing a central role
sure.
in the success
sure.
of the team.
Right.
And yes, that's the perfect world for everybody, and that's completely understandable.
I hope we have a great show, but I hope I'm really,
but
really
I hope,
good.
Right, I hope it's because of Osher, not so much because of me, from your point of view, at least. Today we'll talk about OTAs and guys that have you know, not so much that Chad Henne has to prove anything today. It's the first day of OTAs. We're not trying to over-dramatize it, but as it is the first opportunity this week to be out there as a complete 90-man roster. The rookies have had their mini camp. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys coming back. There's got to be some nervous moments, obviously, for Blake Bortles as mm-hmm. well, because now you're not just the big fish in the small pond. Now the pond is full with all your teammates.
I think even getting back to Chad Henne, and you mentioned something that struck something. He has talked all off season about playing the role a little better and being more of the leader in the quarterback room. Now that he is supposed to be the guy going in, he's a little more, I don't say he wasn't confident before, but he has a little more of a role in the locker room. He's a little more assertive, if you will. So I think today, being the first day of OTAs, it is important on that front to maybe walk the walk and talk the talk and do all those quarterback things, maybe with a little more boldness in the stride than last year when he was the backup and competing with Blaine Gabbert.
And I think it's natural, too, for any veteran teammates to kind of rally around
sure.
the guy that they've been a teammate with. Not that they have anything against Blake Fortles.
And these guys like Chad. They want him to do well. Obviously, everybody knows when you draft a quarterback number three overall, at some point he's going to be the guy. But this team, these offensive guys, they like playing for Chad. So there will certainly be, as you say, a rallying around the guy and accepting that leadership, if you will.
So we've got 3 days of OTAs this week, and next week as well, and the fans get to come out, I believe, June 5th. I think that's next Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They get to come out and watch that a little bit. We'll talk today about some of the storylines that we'll be watching, not only from the quarterbacks. That's obvious something you keep your eye on. And really, much like the rookie minicamp at this stage of the offseason, it's easiest to watch the ball in the air.
Sure.
How the quarterback's throwing it, how do the wide receivers look, how do the DBs look covering
right.
them? Are they getting burned? Are the guys getting open all the time?
Well, and that's stuff that does translate. As you know, you watch enough practices. Even if the linemen are doing any blocking things, which there's very, very little of that, it's really tough to judge, and even the linemen will tell you.
Wait, there's none of that, John, in the National Football League,
right.
in these non-contact practices.
Whatever there is going on the line, and yes, there's none of that. There's not going to be much you can see. There's not going to be much you can do. But in terms of watching the ball in the air, we saw it Allen Robinson in the rookie camp. You saw some things that you like that you think might translate.
Sure.
Just that ability to go after the ball, timing things. So there are things with the skill position guys that you can watch.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I just found it interesting because, it happens. It's impossible to put that many big men
sure.
running around and not have them run into each other from
right.
time to time. And one of the rookies from Kansas City, I don't know, offensive or defensive lineman, said, boy, it was a lot more physical on the line play in this mini camp than I thought it would be.
Right.
It's like, wait a minute. Back up, everybody. Hey, Rook, you got to learn to talk like a veteran here. None of that actually happened out on the practice field. I think it's an accepted part that there's going to be some of that. You try to avoid as much
sure.
as possible. And in fact,
players are going to be players, and they're going to gear toward that. You're on the football field.
Absolutely.
But go ahead. No, it's not something that's going to be, it just doesn't play a huge factor in the practice.
Absolutely. Who was it, Tony, that we talked to? Which one of the coaches was talking about? You're not even allowed to line up across from the guy on the defensive and offensive lines.
Right.
I think it was Coughlin on with the drill.
Oh, was that what? Yeah. You're right. It was Tom Coughlin went on with the drill, and we had that. We replayed that interview,
yeah.
and he said at this stage you're not even allowed to line up directly over mm-hmm. another guy. So we'll watch for a lot of things today. And today in the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, we're going to ask you to weigh in via social media or via the phone lines at 641-1010 and tell us which returning Jaguar player, in other words, not free agent or rookie addition to this roster, but which returning player has the most to prove to you this year, not today, but this year. And I think there are a number of candidates, John. I think it just kind of points to the state of this roster. There's so many question marks, and you can go with young guys, you can go with guys that have been around for a while that maybe haven't lived up to their draft position, whatever you want to go with. So we'll kind of go through offensively and defensively and point out some of these guys that we think have some steps to take mm-hmm. in 2014 to fulfill their potential here. You can weigh in via Twitter at MD_1010XL, at John Osher, OEHSER, oh yes it is, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, any of those methods, and of course, Facebook.com/Jaguars today. For you, did you have Friday off as well? 4-day weekend?
I had it off, I was here. I'm not going to say it wasn't
the most grueling
day.
So what did you do for the 3-day week? I assume you studied your playbook and you didn't go to Vegas like Mark Long. I mean, Mark Long must not take his job very seriously
right.
if he's flying out to Vegas.
Well, the shows are archived, so I spent a lot of time listening to Jaguars today.
This is true. This is not a rookie answering questions here, Tony. He is a very savvy veteran without question today. So we'll get into a little bit of that today. We'll get into that kind of a, I don't know how you want to look at it, a funny story, but the circus that surrounds Johnny Manziel and what you would have had here in Jacksonville, every single move he makes, no matter how small. You had the lawsuit, the ridiculous one
mm-hmm.
That was filed against Manziel. You had an equally ridiculous one that was filed against Blake Bortles that never right. really got talked about by anybody because he's Blake Bortles.
If it's attached to Johnny Football, it's going to be, I mean, you know.
Although his was a little more salacious. Right. Just
I mean,
a little.
I mean, I was actually running on the beach on Saturday and saw Blake. Now, if, and I just ran by, you know, you don't bother a guy in that situation. If it had been Johnny Manziel on the beach in Jacksonville, you would have probably had 15, 20, you know, Twitter photos, probably a lot of them doctored. I mean, that's the circus that's going to surround the guy. You know, so we're not dealing with that.
And did Blake spray you with champagne as you ran by?
Well, he you know.
he keep that between the two of you or what?
Wanted to talk some football, but I said, look, I'm
see, there he was on the beach, right. Playbook in hand, right. Wanting to talk football with the senior writer. All right, we'll take our first time out of the day. John Osher is going to stick around with us for about another hour as OTAs will be on the practice field. The Jags will at 11:25 this morning. As soon as the show's over, Tony and I will head out to the practice field as well. We'll have a full report for you. John will online, and we will tomorrow here on Jaguars Today as well. So feel free, again, to weigh in. Today's question, which returning Jaguar player has the most to prove in 2014? 641-1010. Phone lines open to you throughout the show today, as well as all those social media avenues. And we'll start to kind of go through both sides of the football and what we're looking for in these organized team activities. OTAs has become an acronym. I wonder how many people really, probably a lot of people do. There's got to be people out there that have no idea. What is an OTA?
OTIS.
Anyway, it's an OTA is what it is, ladies and gentlemen. They love their acronyms in the National Football League. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live from EverBank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, random question for the senior writer, Jaguars.com, John Osher.
Random.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you a fan of musicals?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a background there.
Background there. Wow.
I can name some names.
What? Give us an example. What do you enjoy?
You know, Sunset Boulevard. I'm Andrew Lloyd Webber guy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Les Miserables.
See, you're a fan of real musicals.
Aspects
I'm a fan of
love,
like Grease.
Sure. Those are good.
And Hair and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, my wife is a big musical, you know, gal. So it's in the house.
Oh.
So I hear it. I
okay.
Mean, it's
around. You go around the house singing Oklahoma.
Well, you know. I usually do it in very manly clothes.
Okay.
Just to make sure, you know, it's.
I don't know. I don't know what that means.
No puffy shirts.
That's why I was just curious because Lauren
I'm
said,
a tough guy, Mike.
Lauren said good morning to me on my instant messenger. I said, good morning, Starshine. The Earth says hello. And that's a line from
yes, it is.
Hair.
Right.
And Lauren was cracking up because she thought I just made that up. She's like, you're very weird. that may be the case as well, but not for that reason.
Well, that's kind of your MO. Between shows, usually. You make up song lyrics.
I do.
Write them yourself.
I do. I'm a little Weird Al Yankovic wannabe is what I am. All right, let's center it back here, Jaguars Today. John, I told you a random question there for Johnny O, the senior writer. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Today, talking about day one of OTAs. First of all, I'll ask you, John, this. You've covered a bunch of these, both with the Jags and the Indianapolis Colts.
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to accomplish? What are teams trying to accomplish right now? Installing the playbook, just getting the rust off? What first day of OTAs? What are they going to set out to do?
I think especially for this team, the next 3 or 4 weeks are about establishing the playbooks for the young guys. And there are so many young guys, so many guys coming in from out. Zane Beatles, Toby Gerhart, you know, they're pros. They know how to run an NFL offense, but they haven't run this offense. So the rookies got a taste of it already. The veterans have a taste of it already. This is a chance to now start putting in the system, the schemes, the meetings, all that stuff with the entire team together. When you bring in a lot of new players, there's a lot of expectations around a team. A lot of times teams fall short because it's tough to get that many people on the same page. That's why this time is critical. This and training camp, they'll essentially go over the same thing twice. So you want to get everybody on the same page, as much chemistry and continuity during this time as you can. It's almost a mini training camp, except for some of the things you can't do on the field.
When Peyton Manning was running things in Indy, and mm-hmm. I assume he was running things in Indy, for you know, I mean, mm-hmm. That's a slight exaggeration, but not much.
Sure.
When you're on the field together as a team for the first time, does he expect everybody to be up to speed with him, or was that a process where he realized that you had to certain guys because of the circumstances you're talking about, had to be brought along a little more slowly.
Oh, I'm sure he expected them to. Now, they weren't going to be. I mean, the level of expectation that he created was part of what sort of drove that franchise. But you're not going to be up to speed at the start, but this is what this is about, and it's why intensity during this time is important between the quarterbacks, the receivers. You asked about Peyton. I know he expected to use this time, and Tony Dungy did too when he was the coach there. They didn't go to camp until very, very late, training camp, because they considered this time an extended training camp in terms of getting timing down, in terms of what they wanted to put into the offense and defense. It had to get done during this time, so they didn't have to go to training camp until the very last minute.
When you look at let's look at the offense here. We kind of talked about Chad Henne, and let me take it back to last year a little bit. Circumstances with the way the schedule was, I couldn't be out of practice very often with the doing 1-4. But all the reports we got, Brent Martineau would tell us, you know, Chad Henne's not looking good in practice, and that's with over the course of the summer. Blaine Gabbert gets to start the beginning of the year. Is, in your opinion, is Henne a guy who's more of a gamer than he is a practice player?
That is how it has appeared so far. It may be. Blaine always looked very good in practice. I mean, he was a guy who looked the part, made beautiful throws. When you watched him, he was something to watch in practice. So it may just be that Chad didn't look that good. But Chad, I would say the first year Chad got in, the way he played against Houston, it surprised a lot of people because he hadn't looked as good in practice as he wound up looking in the games that year.
So, but it could have been a combination of the fact that Blaine maybe was just the opposite, and he was shining above his level of
and
play.
And you're playing with different guys. You're playing with backups. In 2000, the year I'm referencing is 2012. Wasn't that great a team, I think, by any measure. They were 2-14, so there wasn't a lot around them. When you're splitting reps like that, which they did, it can be tough to get continuity. So, I think from talking to Chad, I haven't asked him this specifically, he really feels going into this offseason that it's a fresh start. He's going to approach the offseason, as I said, with a little more boldness to the walk, if you will. And I think he's looking forward to it. He's got 6 or 7 years of experience in this situation. He's been through this. If he's going to have a good camp, if he's going to have a good off season, this should sort of be that point where it meets where his experience, his ability is sort of at a peak. If he's going to have a good off season, this should be it.
This should be the time,
sure.
Right. But let's say he looks kind of how he looks. So let's say he is a bit of a gamer, and he struggles a little bit. I think they know, they've seen enough of him in games. They can know to expect a certain level of play on Sunday afternoons. Yeah. Does it really matter when you're talking about a competition between he and Blake Bortles? Because is it more about, even if Chad doesn't look the part, unless Blake does look the part, or even if he looks even a little better than Chad, if he doesn't look like they feel, if they don't have the sense that he's completely ready for the job, it's not really going to matter what Chad does so much.
I think that last point you made is probably right on point. It's more about Blake in terms of, clearly when they drafted him, they've said publicly that they don't expect that he will be ready. They didn't think any of the quarterbacks in this class would be ready by next offseason. I mean, by next season, I'm sorry. So it would stand to reason that Blake would have to outperform that expectation on a pretty significant basis and be very consistent, be very ready, just kind of knock your socks off everywhere, in the hallway, in the locker room, on the field, and just kind of show he's ready. And even then, there would probably be a little bit of a preconceived notion to overcome. They've got it in their heads that he's going to need a little time, so he'll probably have to do something to knock that out of their heads, if you will.
I heard Mike DiRocco on with Jeff Prosser this morning on 1010XL, and I thought he was right on. It's going to be interesting to chart the reps in 11-on-11, because we know that Dave Caldwell sat here and told us that once they get to the season, even in season, it's not typical for the backup to get many reps, but they're going to carve out a bigger portion. Mm-hmm. They have a plan. But now's the time when you can do that. You, in the offseason, particularly early on, what do you expect the division of labor to be in 11-on-11s?
That'll be interesting. I don't I assume Chad will get more because you're preparing him to start this season and to start right away. But as Mike said, that'll be something to watch, and it'll be interesting because they are doing something a little different, and they're obviously very focused on getting Blake ready. So it'll be interesting to see if they can establish sort of a prototype for how this happens. I expect it to be closer to 50-50 now than it would be maybe during training camp when they're trying to get ready for the season.
Yeah, and so I would agree with you, though, that at this point, if he is your starter, your presumptive starter, he's always going to get more.
Sure.
The question is, will he get the same percentage of more that he typically would have in a one-versus-two battle when
right.
you're not preparing
the
that
same
two.
Percentage of more. I like that.
You know what I'm saying? The same percentage
you
of more.
You were good at
that's
math in high school,
that's
weren't you?
That's a commonly used NFL phrase, John.
I'm going to write
that
down.
I've been around the league long enough.
I'm going to add that to my glossary.
To know that one. All right, let's move off the quarterbacks here for a minute. Let's go to Cecil Shorts. Cecil is the most accomplished wide receiver mm-hmm. almost by default on this roster. I think the biggest thing he needs to prove this year is the ability to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, if he does, in terms of his game, what are you expecting out of him in 2014?
If he can do that, he's important for a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, if you don't see Cecil Shorts, easy for me to say.
Yeah, you say that three times fast.
Around the locker room, around the facility, you may miss the fact that he is a very exemplary guy around here in terms of these receivers who are coming in. I believe almost by default will look to him, maybe not because of his numbers, although his numbers are good the last couple of years, but the way he carries himself, the way he listens to Jerry Sullivan, the way he has worked to go from point A as a rookie to point B now is impressive, and he's definitely got the work ethic and the approach that the younger guys can learn from by default. I'm not a big guy for veterans necessarily bringing guys along, but if you watch Cecil Shorts on a daily basis, you can certainly learn how to approach things in terms of getting better. On the field, it's definitely a big year for him because he has not been able to stay healthy for the entire year. If he can, I think he's going to benefit a great deal from these young guys being here, and it could be a very good year for him. Still could lead the team in receiving, still could be the guy for a year.
Wouldn't you expect it? I mean, would it be a disappointment to you if he didn't lead the team in receiving, unless we're talking about a truly breakout rookie season for one of these guys?
I think it would be disappointing to him because I think him and Jerry Sullivan would both agree that he took a significant step, obviously, in 2012. And in 2013, I think he was ready to take a step, and the injury that he played through was much more severe than he let on at first or than was known at first because you're trying to get through a season. I think he thought he was ready for a much bigger year had he been healthy. If he can stay healthy, it'll be interesting to see what he can do with some weapons around and the people have to account for.
And knowing that nobody has it made on a team that has won six games in the last 2 years, but when I look at Ace Sanders, I almost feel like he proved more last year by, I thought, doing more than they expected, more than mm-hmm. they drafted him to
sure.
do, that he can almost settle back into a more comfortable role this year, that he's got to come in with a lot of confidence because
yeah.
he was asked to, you know, play outside a lot more and, you know, all things considered, did fairly well at it.
It'll be neat to see how they plan to use him because, as you said, he did so much more than was expected and I would say showed flashes in a lot of different areas. I wouldn't put him on any all-rookie teams, but he showed flashes on an offense that was sort of struggling to find itself, and you got the feeling that he did enough where Jed Fish has to be sitting there this offseason going, I could use him here, I could use him here, oh, I could use him over here too. So I think he'll still play a little bit of that Darren Sproles-type role if necessary, but I also think he has a chance to, as you said, sort of focus down, focus on being a very good slot, a very good quickness-type receiver, and maybe not even have the numbers that he had last year, but be very effective in certain situations.
Got to be, you would think, your primary punt returner as well, at least on paper, at this moment.
Again, unless something knocks them off of that, you would think, because he has special quickness in that area. He's not a straight-ahead burner necessarily, but his ability to make people miss and that quickness, you know, you would expect him to be a guy to take a jump from year two to year one. from year one to year two, for knowing how to utilize that quickness. Sometimes people come into the league and they're quick and they don't know how to use it. Now he's seen it and has an idea of how to use that quickness. Could be key for him this year.
They'll have at least five receivers, possibly six, on the football team. A lot of bodies,
yeah,
at least, competing for those last two spots. You can make a case for a variety of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them more, undrafted free agents are going to have to show more because
right,
there's less invested in those guys. But
Mike Brown's interesting there. I mean, people, probably myself included, sometimes tend to write him off or forget about him because he didn't come in drafted. But last year he did some productive things for a team that was sort of starting to find itself a little bit, had some decent numbers. I think the coaching staff trusts him, and he'll be a hard guy to cut come the end of the season because you know what he can do. He's a nice safety net to have because if guys get hurt, they know where he can plug in.
It's not like Tanner Dahl's got a ton of guaranteed money, but they did go out and sign him, and he has had a reputation of being a good special teams player as well. So,
and again, I think that's that depth you're talking about where, people automatically want to cut guys this time of year. They want to know who's going to make the team, who's not. When Gus Bradley and Caldwell talk about competition, those are the kind of situations that create that competition you want. I don't know if Doss or Brown or, which one of those guys wins that out. That's the sort of position that that sort of situation that you're trying to get at more positions.
You're trying to throw a half dozen guys at two spots, basically.
Right. And the last couple of years, we're used around here to sort of knowing that those fifth and sixth guys, it wasn't great competition. That's a situation that has a chance to be good, productive competition where a guy who doesn't make it could be pretty good.
All right, I tell you what, we'll take a time out. We'll come back. We'll look at some of these offensive linemen because I think when you talk about returning players, most of the offensive line has something to prove in that regard. And so we'll go through the offensive line, get to some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball as well. OTAs getting underway in a little under an hour. First time your full field Jacksonville Jaguars will be on the practice field as a 90-man roster. That's coming up today. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today here, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. I just made Osher jump a little bit there. He was so into whatever he's reading on his laptop over there. He's always working, people. He's grinding. He's got the playbook with him 24/7. Even when he's off on Memorial Day. I saw you yesterday your mailbag was posted on Jaguars.com, so you must have done that yesterday. Did you do that yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay. Couldn't have been pre-answered.
No,
post.
Never.
No,
never.
Not at all possible. OTAs, they'll be on the practice field in, about 45 minutes or so. Johnny O will depart us a little bit early and get out there for the beginning of practice, and Tony and I will follow as soon as we wrap up Jaguars Today. All right, offensive line. Clearly, Luke Joeckel's got a lot to prove, right? I mean, I think he may be the guy, and when you're responding today, it doesn't matter if you agree with our opinion or not. We're just going to pick one of your responses via Twitter and Facebook and give you a Jaguars Today T-shirt. But I think being the second overall pick,
mm-hmm,
playing as few games as he did, playing basically a quarter of football at the position they ultimately drafted
right,
him to play. I mean, as they've talked about, it's like having another first-round pick.
Sure.
Well, the reason it's like that is because you haven't really seen him on the field.
And everybody you talk to is confident that he has all those skill set things you talk about that should make him a very natural left tackle. He liked how he played in that quarter. The team liked how he played in that quarter. Talking to Tony Boselli, said, hey, he's got it all. He thinks he's going to be very, very good. At the same time, he played about 15 plays. And he'll be the first one to tell you, yeah, I've got a lot to prove. He's got a lot to prove to himself. He's got a lot to prove to the team, everything. So there's no question he's one. Austin Pastor on the other side is as well, because they have said in the offseason they like this guy. They think he can develop into a right tackle. He looked very, very good for a guy who came where he came from last year and looked very, very good regardless of that. But if he's going to be the starting right tackle long term, he certainly has to continue developing. So, as you said, the entire offensive line, the other two positions, center and right guard, not quite fit into this category because we don't really know. It looks like Mike Brewster. It looks like Brandon Linder. But those guys aren't really returning where you think they have a whole lot to prove. They have to prove themselves.
I think I would count Mike Brewster in that category, though. You know, he's not a rookie,
right.
So he's got a chance. And I think, if we're all doing our depth chart on paper today, Mike Brewster is your starting center. I would expect.
But you're probably not writing it in indelible ink.
Oh, of course not. Well, so. I think there's a, you know, I don't think you're doing the entire. I think you're writing Jokel and Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
You can write it in your indelible ink.
Right.
Remember Eraserimate, by the way? Never really worked as well as they were advertised.
No, it didn't.
It
always,
the erasable ink.
It was always all smeary.
it kind of turned your paper blue, basically. Yeah. Just a light blue.
You're always
blue.
Disappointed after you use it.
Throwback. That and Trapper Keepers. All right, but I think from that point of center over, you can't mm-hmm. write any of that in. You presume Pastor, because he seems like the evident guy, and they talked him up.
I think Linder... Very, very good chance he starts, if not immediately, very, very soon. I mean,
again, probably disappointing if you trade up into the third round and you have that big a hole at that position.
I'd hesitate to say disappointing for a rookie because there's so much to learn. But by the end of the season, in their minds, you would think he's the guy.
All right. I would not hesitate to say it. For me, it would be disappointing. At least surprising would be, I think, certainly fair. So, and look, once they're on the field, it doesn't matter if you were taken second overall, if you're an undrafted free agent, you still got to block the guy ahead of you. And if you're the weak link, you know, you're not getting it done. But being second overall, you do come with more expectations, and there are going to be more eyes on you. And
right.
There's going to be a higher level of pressure.
Well, first of all, you don't need to tell me about being a weak link. So
I looked right at you when I said that.
Yeah, and there's Jokel again. There is no worry inside the building that he can't do it, but at some point now he has to step on the field and do it.
Yeah, Tony and I, a little later in the show, are going to take a look at some numbers we looked up today. We're basically, you know, how much of a sure thing are first-round picks in terms mm-hmm. of we looked at a 10-year window of guys that have at least played 3 years in the National mm-hmm. Football League now, and have they made a Pro Bowl? That's not the only bar you measure success by, but it's the one that was simple and we chose. And so we'll look at not only first-round picks overall, but top 10 picks, and then specifically offensive tackles mm-hmm. in the top 10. You think it's the perception is it's you're almost a sure thing if you're an offensive tackle in the top 10. It's pretty much a coin flip as far as that goes.
Well, usually you're either very good and very solid from the start, or you're not. So I mean, if you remember Bisella, the great ones. I don't say it comes easy to them, but the skill set translates that if you can do that, you can do it, if you follow me. You're put on this earth to do it, and you have the leverage, the balance, the quickness, all those things that make it. So you would think that the transition is less difficult at that position.
It is interesting. You start to look at a lot of these guys, and not necessarily top 10 guys, but and even some of them, though, there seems to be more of a pattern of they're starting at other positions, whether it's right tackle moving to left tackle, even some of them playing guard and then eventually moving out to tackle. And it's almost like a graduated scale. Like, we're going to put you at a spot that there's a little less technicality, maybe a little less in terms of the caliber of pass rusher mm-hmm. that you're going to face, whatever the case may be. And as you prove to be able to handle that, we're going to give it to you, kind of like the Jags are doing with Blake Bortles. Show us that you're up to this level, and then we'll give you more.
And I don't have a theory about why that is. I think it's smart, but I don't have a theory as to why that is.
And then you get the Bisellis that you just throw in there, and you say, go do your thing.
And realistically, a once in a generation, you know, a once every 10 or 15 type of your player.
Certainly for this franchise.
So, right.
No question about it. All right. I don't think we're missing anybody offensively for the most part because, I'll tell you what. What about the running backs in Jordan Todman, Denard Robinson? Which one of those guys has more to prove to you?
Oh, I think there's no question Denard. I mean, I think he'd be the first to tell you he has a lot to prove. He thinks he can be much better than he was. You know, he has to figure out the ball security thing, and he has to show that the glimpses that he showed, and there were some glimpses last year where you thought, boy, this could be a special player in certain situations. I think he's going to be a 1,000-yard guy, but this could be a really big play player, but they have to trust him to be on the field more, and that's what he has to prove.
I would agree that he does have a lot. He was a draft pick, but I think that if they both, It's hard to say. I guess if you say Denard Robinson lived up to his potential, he could be a 6 to 10 touch a game guy. Mm-hmm. But Jordan Todman could be the primary backup to Toby Gerhart. I mean, I don't know what's more important. I think they're both important. And I think for Todman, he's kind of a forgotten guy because people are enamored with, you know, Storm Johnson comes in. They like the new thing.
I just think Denard has more to, if our criteria for this is more to prove.
Yeah.
Certainly there were deficiencies last year that he knew he needed to work on. He wanted to get bigger. He wanted to have more ball security. So he certainly needs to prove that. And if he proves that, then he could be a very, very dynamic player, very productive player for this team. So,
All right. I think that's fair. Yeah, more to prove. Todman's proven more on the football field, so that makes sense.
What Todman has to prove is he a better backup than Storm Johnson will be? I mean, I think that's where he has to prove, but it's more of a one-on-one competition.
Right, and I guess in just the way I'm looking at it with Todman is he may end up, even though he's proven more, it may not be in more of an integral part of this team.
Sure.
Therefore, maybe he's going to end up being more important, but he's, like you said, he's already done more, so maybe less to prove when you compare that. All right, let's get on the defensive line here. I'll give you two guys, and you tell me which one has more to prove with this team.
Now, is this a percentage of more?
This or percentage just more? Of more,
all right,
absolutely.
All right.
Tyson Alualu,
right.
Who I think that fans look at him now and say, he is what he is. He's never going to be anything more than he is. He's, you know, kind of versatile guy in that you could play him at end, you could play him at tackle, but don't expect any flash. Don't expect any big plays. That's it. And Roy Miller, who played hurt last year, and I think they have maybe greater expectations for. But clearly, you know, he hasn't done much for this team in 1 year. He played okay, but it wasn't it wasn't like Derek Marks kind of opened your eyes sometimes on a weekly basis last year.
I would say with Roy, neither of those guys are going to be the stat guy that Derek Marks is. I would not say that Roy didn't do a lot last year, because when this team played well for those 4 or 5 games right after the bye, Roy Miller was a big part of that. And it was amazing he was a big part of that, because he was already playing hurt. So he probably didn't have the stats that maybe people expected when they signed him.
And you're not going to.
But I think it's probably not fair to say that he didn't do a lot for this team last year. I don't think he played as well as he is capable of playing. I think he'd be the first, you know, he was in a lot of pain by last year and playing with one shoulder in the second half of the season. If he can stay healthy, I think he can be a much better player on the interior than he was last year.
And maybe I just phrased it poorly, that much like Cecil Shorts, his biggest challenge is going to be to not only stay on the field, but to be 100% and be able to give you what they thought when they gave him. When they signed him, they signed Marks, they gave him a 1-year deal. When they signed Roy Miller, they gave him a 2-year deal, which makes you think that they saw a little something that more consistent up to that point in his career.
Right, and most of those guys who signed last year signed 2-year deals. That was the norm. Sinderic actually asked them, he wanted the 1-year deal because he thought he could part. He sort of gambled on himself, if you will. And but when they signed those guys in that first wave, if you can call it a wave of free agency in Caldwell's first year, it was certainly Roy Miller that they were the most excited about and thought that they had what they thought was sort of a prototype for that early free agent, which was a guy who was maybe undervalued on the open market and could definitely come in and help them and fit what they wanted to do right away. So I think he is a key guy. If he can stay healthy and be better than he was last year, and he was not bad last year, then the interior is much better for it.
You look at the defensive end position. We've talked a lot about Andre Branch. Kind of, you know, second half of the year showing up last year. I think though this is a group as a whole when you factor in tackles and ends that you start to do the math.
They may keep about 18 Leos.
It seems like. I mean, 8 Leos, Ottos, DTs, whatever you want
to.
There's a lot. I mean, I keep going back to Dave Caldwell when we talked about the defensive line and how they beefed that up and how they have greater depth than, like, say, the front eight. The first guy I mentioned, I believe, was Derek Marks. Second guy you mentioned was Avery Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to put too much emphasis on that, but it was just interesting to me that that was a second name that popped into mind for him. So, you know, Ryan Davis, Ziggy Hood, who they signed. There's so much competition, I think, that's going to be going on, not directly between those two, but, I mean, it just as a group for roster spots. Andre Branch could turn into a 12-sack guy this year. He could turn into a guy that doesn't make the final cut.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting over the next couple of months to see how that defensive line position plays out. They clearly, in free agency, their idea was we have to get more guys who can play more plays. And the top guys, Sendarek, Babin, Alo-Alo, all played, I think, more than 800 plays last year. If you look at Seattle's numbers, which is probably the best comparison, none of their linemen played more than 700. So if the model is that, to have that rotation, they thought they were way too beat up and those guys had played way too many plays by the end of the year, and that was a big reason why they did not play as well in the final three games. So the idea was to get more numbers, more bodies who could play more key plays. Now the question becomes, how many of those guys can you keep around, and how realistic is it to keep Babin, Branch, Clemens, Davis, Chris Smith? Can you find spots? Can you find a way for them to all be around? That's a question that'll be asked in the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure of the answer yet.
And what position group does that come at the expense of, too?
Right.
You know, because
right.
you start to get into that numbers game.
But you can't automatically assume that they'll keep a certain number, because they really, really think that being deep and having a lot of bodies at that position is important. And they're so versatile. They run so many things up front that you can find different roles. This is not, as we talked about during one of the breaks, not a straight 4-3 where you have one type playing at this end position, specific types playing the two tackles, and then this other end. They're going to rotate a lot and play a lot of different roles. So that's an area to watch for the next 2 months.
As much nickel as is played in the National Football mm-hmm. League now, and with as many multiple fronts and all these linemen we're talking about, could linebacker be the position group that has fewer numbers than you would expect, just
yes.
simply because you're going to have more DBs on the field?
Well, yes.
Okay. that was the answer I was looking for.
I mean, if you look at their numbers at those spots and the way they play it, that would stand to reason that that's the case.
All right, we'll look at a few more of those guys, like Geno Hayes, Josh Evans on the defensive side of the ball in the back seven, if you will. Mike Dempsey, John Osher from Jaguars.com, Fat Tony. Johnny O is going to stick around for another 20 minutes or so, and then he'll head out to the practice field as the players are on the field 30 minutes from now. First day of full team OTAs. It's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. And on this date, we'll look back in the future and say this is the first day that Chad Henne and Blake Bortles faced off on the practice field. That's about what you got. Actually, I got a couple of birthdays today. 1972, Antonio Freeman, a former Pro Bowl wide receiver with the Green Bay Packers, was born. And in 1974, the Gators' second Heisman Trophy winner, Danny Werfel, who I'll argue, at least up until the point he played, was the most accomplished SEC player ever. Starting quarterback, won the SEC every year, won the Heisman, won a national title, and that's pretty darn good. A.J. McCarron won two titles as a starter and was a redshirt freshman, did not play on a third title team. That's pretty darn good, too. And Tim Tebow, part of two title teams, starter on one, didn't win all the SEC titles that Werfel did. Regardless, you may remember him for that, or you may choose to remember him for wearing his helmet backwards after one particularly notable play with, I believe, the New Orleans Saints at the time.
You'll get no argument from me on Werfel. He was a fantastic college player.
Fantastic college player.
A touch more arm strength, and he'd been a great pro.
Maybe more than a touch.
But he was I actually put Danny Werfel on the All-State team. That was my All-State year when I was with the Times Union.
Was it?
Yep.
You really did, huh? You really went out on a limb on that
myself.
One.
Left Ray Lewis off, by the way.
I said Andre Branch could be a 12-sack guy or not make the roster, and someone said, wow, way to go out on a limb. What were they supposed to – were they expecting me to say he'll have 14.5 sacks this
right.
year? And that is exactly what he'll have. If you're going to ask me, I'm going to say he'll make the team and he'll have probably about 8. Sacks.
Well, I think your point is he could be very, very good. He showed potential. At the same time, it's bunched up enough at that spot that you don't know how it's going to play out.
Yes, and I would say that is more bold than putting Danny Werfel on the All-State team, Tony. But it was one I remember well.
It wasn't a lock. It was not a lock.
What year was
that? I almost left Ray Lewis off, by the way.
In 96?
No, that was 90. It had been 91, 92 when they were in high school.
Oh, the high school All-State team.
High school All-State. Back when I was in Extra Times Union.
I was wondering. I thought you were doing the. I was like, the guy won the Heisman.
No, you don't. Of course, you don't make All-State.
The best quarterback in the state.
he was All-State at Florida.
Like, what are you
good
talking about? Okay, now who was the? Who did he beat out? Do you remember?
I think Cresser was in that bunch.
Was he?
Patrick Sapp Rains was in that.
Eric Cresser, who spent a lot of his college career throwing touchdowns to...
No one, right?
Or... Randy Moss.
Right. At Marshall. Yeah. Right, sir.
That's all I know. Yeah. That's all I got for you on Eric Cresser. Yeah. Matty was runner-up on the Osher, the O team. The
Palm All-State. Beach somewhere. So.
There you go. We stretched that out. That's this date in football history for you. It's brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. In the meantime, you can visit jamesjmccall.com, get a complete list of comprehensive care services. All right, Ozone, let's look at a couple more guys on the defense, and that will start with Geno Hayes. A little bit of a forgotten guy. I thought he played okay last year. And, again, another one of these guys, young guy that fit the mold of what they were looking for last year, mid-20s.
Sure.
You hope were emerging into the best years of their career and got him on a two-year contract. What are your expectations in 2014?
He's what they wanted. He played. He's exactly what they wanted in that first wave of free agency last year. He played. He was fine. Probably not going to make the Pro Bowl anytime soon, but at linebacker, until you can start, you can't draft and develop every position on the roster in 1 year. So at some point, they will start drafting and developing linebacker. Until then, Geno Hayes had a solid year. You would expect him, if he can avoid injury, because he was hurt a lot last year in terms of he played through it. He didn't miss a lot of games, but he played through that knee that cost him the last part of the season. So if he can stay healthy, you expect him to be very solid this year.
That's a common theme, if they can stay healthy.
Well, yeah. I mean, but for a guy like that, I think he was very good. Obviously could have been better had he not been hampered with the knee all year.
I think Posluszny, I thought, had the best year of his career last
sure.
year. And so I don't think a ton to prove. You're always trying to get better, but I don't think Paul Posluszny among defensive players has much to prove.
Yeah, what you want are things you can rely on. You would be surprised, again, if healthy, if he's not exactly what he was last year, which is very, very, very good.
All right, and going from what you were talking about before, I think with Todman and Denard Robinson, you look, Cyprian still has something to prove, I think,
sure.
but compared to his other teammates in the defensive backfield, not as much.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Grotz, Josh Evans. Josh Evans kind of gets brushed past a lot.
Right.
You know, that you look at Grotz along with Alan Ball, and Will Blackman, and you look at your top three corners in whatever order you want to rank those guys, and you say, okay, we feel like we're decently solid
right.
there. If they're healthy, how do you feel about Josh Evans at free safety?
Well, first with Sip, it's been interesting to me that you thought he played better in the second half of last season. Since they've gone back and reviewed last season, all you've heard the coaches talk about is they really, really liked what they saw at the end of last season, and they really think he's a guy who in year two is going to be much more consistent, much more reliable, a young leader, if you will, on that defense, which he naturally is anyway. But if anybody on this defense could take a real jump into a, I don't say elite yet because it's year two, but headed that direction, it's probably him. At the other spots, Winston Guy challenged Josh Evans at the end of last year, so I think that's a position in camp that's a battle. They're both very athletic guys. And Craig Loston, some guys like that out of collegiate free agency, that other safety position, I don't want to say wide open, but it's open.
All right. That's pretty much kind of the roster. I mean, there are a few other guys. In, look, there are plenty
and Grotz
of guys.
Needs to stay healthy, too. I mean,
yeah.
That's a spot where he was very, very good when he played. He has a knack for the ball, but was out a lot last year. If you're going to be that corner and that guy you're building around, you need to be on the field.
Alan Ball, maybe the most underappreciated pickup that they had last year, certainly one of them.
Yeah, I mean, right along with Geno Hayes, Alan Ball, I would say it's fair to say he outperformed what they thought he would when they signed him.
And I think what the average fan on the street, sure. they're like, who's this guy
right.
coming in?
Was very, very good. And that's why you see so many people who analyze free agency and who analyze roster building around the league who like what the Jaguars did in free agency. There are so many busts in free agency, so many high-priced things that happen that are bad for your team, that the Jaguars have signed guys that they're not breaking the bank for in free agency with the idea of not wrecking the salary cap while they're doing their build and develop. And Alan Ball, you know, if every free agency sign is a good Alan Ball, you're very good in free agency. And that's what they wanted to do. That's what they set out to do, and that's what they did.
All right. Today, your Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question today is simply what we've been talking about. Which returning Jaguar player, not free agent, not rookie, guy was on the roster last year, has the most to prove in 2014? We'll review some of the responses we got coming up towards the end of the show. Let's take it outside the Jaguar bubble here and spread it out to the Las Vegas bubble that Johnny Manziel was
occupying. Johnny Football on your screen.
Johnny Football's up on the screen. It's time to talk Johnny and making it rain and spraying champagne and all that comes with that. Honestly, the one knock I have on this whole situation is that Manziel kind of put himself out there and said, you know, all of a sudden I want to downplay the Johnny Football persona. This is all about becoming the quarterback and earning my stripes with the Cleveland Browns. He's got to know.
Sure.
He can go to the Jiffy store, and he's going to end up on somebody's Instagram page, but whatever. But you go to Vegas, and I personally, these guys, that a lot of them go to Vegas, a lot of them go to South Beach, a lot of them go all over the damn world,
right?
All right, and they enjoy their offseason. And if you think that every player and every rookie is constantly studying his playbook. You said
right.
You saw Blake Bortles at the beach. Is anybody going to kill him for going to the beach? Johnny Manziel hops in a private plane. He goes to Vegas. He goes to a fight, and he sits poolside with a bunch of
right.
girls. Is it really any different than however else you might spend some time on your downtime when you don't have your nose in the playbook?
Well, first off, I'm fortunate because if somebody had followed me around with a camera this weekend, that Johnny Football looks a lot like this Johnny Football.
Is that
way.
Is that Osher?
That's me,
in this
right.
Shot right.
So.
There.
I'm just lucky. I was a little more low profile than Johnny this weekend. But I'm just not one who thinks this is a big deal. But I understand your point. If you're going to come out and say that you are changing, if you're going to tell teams that all this is behind you and not a factor anymore, then you probably can't have it both ways. And if you're Johnny Manziel, you sort of have to know that if you do this, it's not going to be on the agate page, to use an old newspaper term, which is
the little small print, right?
It ain't going to be page two.
No, but you know what? I don't think he cares about that,
right.
and I think that the Browns knew who they got when they
sure.
drafted him. Jimmy Haslam, the owner, said last week he's Babe Ruth, he's Ty
right.
Cobb. I don't know if he has all his examples straight, but he said he's a
right.
man's man. You know, there are some athletes that have always been larger than life. They're social stars, they're media stars, they're Hollywood darlings, whatever the case may be. And you know, did anyone crush Joe DiMaggio for dating
right.
Marilyn Monroe? No, they say, wow, that's amazing.
Like, I see up on your screen, I can barely see it, but it's a lot of pictures of Johnny with girls in bikinis.
Yes.
Right? Now, if you're the Browns, you had to know at some point after drafting him that you were going to open up a website and see what you're looking at. This is not a shock.
And so what, honestly? I mean, to me.
I'm not saying it's a criticism. But there are people who will criticize this and use this in the case against Johnny Football. But if you're the Browns, that image, those images should not surprise you. And it's maybe even part of why you brought him in.
He's the electric, you know, guy, the magnetic
He's
guy.
He's their Fat Tony.
Well said. Well played. Well played there. The Jags think Blake Bortles is a better football player, period, or will be a better football player, because Dave Caldwell said he thought that Johnny Manziel may be the most pro-ready now, mm-hmm. but that his game would level off quickly.
Wouldn't have drafted a number three if that wasn't true.
If how much this kind of stuff though, it's tough to ever say that two prospects are exactly even, right?
Right.
But theoretically, right?
Right?
They're exactly even. How much do you think this stuff would play into? Do you think the Jags would care? Not care?
I think you're probably just as happy if you're Dave Caldwell that you're not dealing with this, if there's even anything to deal with, that you're not being asked about this. But had they believed that Johnny Football or Johnny Manziel was the best quarterback in the draft, then you take him and deal with this.
Right, because you know it's coming. You know it's part of the package.
Yeah, if you draft him, this is what you're drafting.
And
there's no doubt.
I get where people say he hasn't earned, you know, he's a rookie, he needs to be studying the playbook. I'm sure he does. And I'm sure it will show up quickly if he doesn't study the playbook.
Right.
But I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, that you can have a weekend on Memorial Day weekend where you go out and take a picture with some bikini-clad ladies, and that doesn't mean you're not necessarily going to be ready for the season. Tom Brady gets photographed all over the world with Giselle, partying all over the world.
Right.
And people, well, he's won a bunch of Super Bowls. Granted, but we're led to believe that these Manning Brady types are constantly on the grind. You covered Peyton Manning for years. Peyton Manning enjoyed his life. He just did it in a more low-key fashion.
In the off-season, Peyton was at every OTA, every off-season, and he was fanatical about it. But I'm not going to say that he was never off-site. I mean, you know, you do your work, and the work shows up on the field. And we'll know about Johnny Football at some point. If he's winning, this is okay. If he's not, this is going to get criticized.
Look, and it will.
The nature of the beast.
It will, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's the cause of him playing poorly. He's a rookie quarterback.
Right.
And rookie quarterbacks don't often excel
but
out of the gates.
If he doesn't want this as part of his image.
That's my one thing. You can't have it both ways.
You can't say
I'm going to tone it down, and
right.
then the first weekend of the first mini camp, you're out in Vegas getting pictured with Gronk, who is the ultimate lunkhead party guy of the National Football League.
You know, it's almost too good to be true.
It really is. Who is this smiling clown in here, by the way? You got Gronk, you got Johnny Manziel, you got all these women in bikinis, and you got this dude over the side awkwardly crossing his arms with the biggest grin on his face. I don't know.
You know what he is? He's a happy guy.
He's a guy in the midst of a bunch of bikini-clad ladies.
That's right.
He's like the ratio is looking pretty good here. All right, we got a break. John, I will see you out on the practice field. John Osher, appreciate you stopping by. We'll hear more from you this week. And, of course, Jaguars.com Live coming up later this week as well with John and J.P. Shatterick. Got a break back here live at Everbank on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, John Osher has taken his lead, the senior writer. He's headed to the practice field. See if you can get any breaking news on who's showing up early to the practice field right now. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. All right. Fat Tony, apparently I'm dumb or dumber than I thought. Or can you know how dumb you are? Wouldn't that be a certain level of intelligence to know exactly how dumb you are?
I don't think you'd want to know. If you were that dumb, you wouldn't
know. Trust me. You don't want to know
ignorance
how dumb you are.
Ignorance is bliss.
All right. Well, apparently maybe. I say I'm so thin-skinned, apparently, I was this morning. When I said Andre Branch could be anything from a 12-sack guy to not being on the roster, someone said, wow, talk about going out on a limb. That may have been a pun. Regards to Branch and limb.
Right.
Being similar things. I don't know. Whatever. Either case, I am dumb, and I do think that Andre Branch could either not make the roster or be a 12-sack guy or land somewhere in between. So if that is not as provocative as you need it to be, so be it. We got a one of the first responses we got today. We'll get to a bunch of them coming up here. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. It's a mouthful. Which returning Jaguar player has the most to prove in 2014 as they're on the field for the first time today for OTAs? And someone said Luke Jokel. He said, if you're a first-round pick, and I'm paraphrasing here, you should be a Pro Bowler. Right, first round pick should be Pro Bowl player. So I started thinking, how true is that? Should you be? And so we decided to go back a few years because we wanted to give players a chance to establish themselves. You can't expect everyone to make the Pro Bowl in their first season. So we looked at the drafts from 2002 through 2011.
Yeah,
and in that 10-year span, each of those players played a minimum or had a chance to play at least 3 years: 11, 12, 13 season. And, Tony, we found that just slightly, out of first-round picks, just less than 40% have made at least one Pro Bowl. That included a guy like Mercedes Lewis, did not include a guy like Eugene Monroe and several other Jaguar draft picks.
Sure.
But it was interesting, some years' drafts, there really is an ebb and flow. You know, some years, you're chock full of guys in the first round making the Pro Bowl. I think the high was 17. So even in the best year, just half. basically.
Just half for making them Pro Bowl. But when you think about what a crapshoot the NFL draft actually is, I mean, you're talking about, we've talked about first-round quarterbacks, just talking about the position of quarterback, looking back over the last 15 to 20 years in the National Football League, and it's about 50-50 between whether or not they're even capable of being a starter in this league or not. I mean, that's the kind of coin flip that you have, generally speaking, in the NFL draft. I think the idea that about 40% of the guys that are being drafted in the first round, basically you're getting a 2 out of 5 chance that that guy's turning into a Pro Bowler, that's about where I would think that number should be.
Right, and that just made me think, though, because that person's perception, I'm sure they weren't saying that they think every person who gets drafted in the first round is a Pro Bowler, but that's what you're hoping to draft.
Absolutely.
Is a Pro Bowl. And I would agree with that sentiment. But even, as we said, in the best years, in that 10-year window we looked at, you had, in 2006, 17 first-rounders have made at least one Pro Bowl out of 32, so just over 50%. In 2010, half the first round. That's pretty good considering those guys have played 4 years.
Yeah.
Half of that 2010 draft have made at least one Pro Bowl. But it really is pretty evenly spread out. You go 15 in 2004. You go 14 in 2007. You go 13 in 11, 2005 and 2013. You drop down to 10 in 2008 and 2002, and you drop down to a low of 6 in the god-awful 2009 draft.
Ew.
Highlighted by, not Ryan Kerrigan, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, I'll leave you to figure that one out. So then, we decide, all right.
Quarterback gold rush year.
Right. It really was, right? And Cam made the Pro Bowl.
He did.
That's the only one of those first-round guys that will ever make the Pro Bowl. And that is not going out on a limb, I realize. So then you said, well, let's look at top 10 picks, and let's narrow it down to that, because Luke Joeckel's the second overall pick. What percentage should you expect out of the top 10 to make the Pro Bowl? And it does increase, but not as dramatically necessarily as you might think, where it went from 39.6, we'll call it 40% of all first-rounders made at least one Pro Bowl. 51 out of the 100 top 10 picks in that 10-year span have made the Pro Bowl. So it's a dead coin flip.
Sure.
On whether or not you're going to make it. Include 2011, by the way, was your banner year with 8 Pro Bowl players.
That's
out of the top 10. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Who was it for the Jags in 2011? I'm trying to think.
Before Joeckel was Blackman.
Was it Blackman?
Yeah.
There you go. That's one of the two. Right there.
Yeah.
No, 2011?
11.
Oh, 11 was Gabbert. Why am I thinking 9 was Gabbert? Yeah, I'm way off on my years. 2009 was Gabbert.
Yeah.
I am way off on my years. Way off on my years. Forget anything I just said. 2009, I think, was Eugene Monroe then, right? Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Way off on my
years. We're back on track.
Either way, all these numbers here, none of the Jags first round or top 10 guys were making the Pro Bowl.
No.
In those years.
And they've been drafted in the top 10 a lot, by the way.
But you had 8. The high water mark was 8 in 2011. And then you had 7 the year before that in 2004. You had a low of 1 in 2009. That's the year, and that really was the worst draft in the last who knows how many years, at least the last 13 years, it appears, was the worst draft that the NFL had. So then you decided, all right, let's look at just offensive tackles.
Sure, in the top 10.
Supposed to be one of the safest positions you can take, right? I mean, that seems to be the perception that you can, you know, you take Jake Matthews, you know you're getting a 12-year starter at offensive tackle. You get Greg Robinson, although Greg Robinson was talking about more about upside. Matthews, like a sure thing. You know what I mean? That's the terms these guys get talked about in. 15, in that 10-year window, 15 offensive tackles went in the top 10 of the NFL draft, and 8 of them have made at least one Pro Bowl. So it's basically a coin
flip. The numbers are about the same.
It's about a 50-50 proposition.
Yeah, I mean, and look, that makes sense to some degree because that's kind of the proposition you're talking about in the first round anyway, as far as whether the player's even able to be a starter or not. I mean, it's boom or bust during the first round of the NFL draft, and I know a lot of people assume, okay, first round pick, this guy's going to hit. Look, it's about a 50-50 proposition as to whether that guy's going to be any good for you at all. That it's about 50-50 that those types of guys in the top 10 are making the Pro Bowl makes a lot of sense to me, but the assumption from fans, and look, they should be. At some point, the Jacksonville Jaguars, if they're going to get back to being competitive in this league, if they're going to be picking a guy like Joeckel at number two overall, then he needs to start being a player that's playing at a Pro Bowl level. Maybe he never makes one because of the other guys that are already in the league and it's hard to get your name in the hopper, that kind of thing. But he needs to be at least a player that you're relying on, which Jacksonville hasn't really found in the last four or
five
years.
Right. There's a big difference between not being a Pro Bowl or not playing up to that level. Fred Taylor could tell you all about that for the better part of his career.
Robert Gallery is a bust.
Completely.
That's a tackle that was drafted at
Eugene
number
two Monroe's overall. Not a bust. Right. I don't consider him a bust. He didn't, you know, wasn't the cornerstone of your franchise in Jacksonville.
But he's a capable
player. He's going to be a long-time starter in the National Football League.
Right.
So that's not, to me, a bust selection. 2011, the eight guy, you had Cam, you had Von Miller, Marcel Darius, don't call me Darius, A.J. Green, Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, take all these guys.
Holy cow.
Alden Smith, he's got his issues, but I'm not on the football field. Jake Locker didn't make it. At least you got that going for you. Tyron Smith, Cowboys. Some people said they reached for him in the top 10. Hmm. There's one of your offensive tackles making the Pro Bowl, and then, of course, Blaine Gabbert, followed immediately by J.J. Watt, which only serves to make that pick more curious. Going down through the top 16, the Jags' original pick was 16 there. You had Ponder at 12, Nick Fairley, who's played well.
Sure, it's been good.
Not a Pro Bowler, but he's played well. Robert Quinn, who was spectacular last year. Mike Pouncey of the Miami Dolphins, who bullied his way to Honolulu. And poor pun. And then Ryan Kerrigan, as we mentioned, who did make a Pro Bowl. And who it was a lot of people thought might be the Jags' pick if they stayed at 16. And they traded up, and there you have it. Beyond that, though, just goes to show you how outside the top 16, Cameron Jordan of the Saints is the only guy who's made a Pro Bowl out of that 2011 draft in the first round beyond the top 16 picks. So I guess, boy, they you know what? As much as it's not a science, it's a little bit of an art, they had their smocks on or something. I mean, they killed it for the most part. Clearly, this franchise's GM at the time did not kill it.
No.
But GMs as a whole crushed it in 2011. 12 of the top 16 picks were all Pro Bowlers, and then the cliff fell off, really, for the rest of the first round. So the teams drafted at the top, for the most part, 75% success rate identified the guys that would go on, at least in the short term, to become stars in the league.
Sure, and you're talking about a team in Cincinnati that got A.J. Green, waited on quarterback, and got Andy Dalton.
And he's been to a Pro Bowl as well.
Right. I mean, that's a really good draft for that team, and that's when Cincinnati turned it around, and it's been a playoff team, basically, since they were able to get those two guys at the top of that draft. So it tells you the impact that a draft can have on the future of a team, especially when you find a guy that can capably play the quarterback position. And it also shows you with a team like Jacksonville what happens when you swing and miss, especially at the quarterback position. But it's been a while now since we know that they've hit on one of these first-round picks. Eugene Monroe was fine, but he was never great. He's not here anymore. He's going to be playing for Baltimore maybe for the next, you know, 5-6 years. That's fine. He's going to be an okay player in the league. But they haven't found a guy that they can build this franchise around, that next big piece, in a very long time in the NFL draft.
So 12 out of the top 16 in 2011 go to Honolulu, and just goes to show you that, you know, you talk about all the, let's go the Russell Wilson method, and let's wait on a quarterback, or let's do this, and we got to find these late-round gems. Well, it certainly helps if you find the late-round gems, but here's how difficult it is. Outside of the top 16 picks, you had Cameron Jordan in the first round. You had Andy Dalton and Kyle Rudolph have been to the Pro Bowl in the second round. You had Justin Houston and DeMarco Murray in the third round. Keep it in mind now, by the third round, you got all these supplemental picks kicking in as well. You had Cameron Jordan have both been to Pro Bowls. You had Julius Thomas, also in the fourth round, went to the Pro Bowl last year. You had Richard Sherman in round five. You had round six, and you had round seven, and
they still had those rounds.
They still had those rounds, and Chaita Ozogwe out of Rice, Mr. Irrelevant, I don't believe has made the Pro Bowl.
I don't think so.
For the Houston Texans. We'll take a look at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight coming up next. Your feedback, and a wide variety of responses, by the way, on which returning Jaguar you think has the most to prove on the practice field right now. By the way, Tony, breaking news, stretching going on, I predict, right now. at OTAs for your Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
We'll be out there before the
Talon's
hour is up.
Talon's probably yelling at somebody.
He is probably yelling at somebody. He's hyping someone up. That's what the youngsters do these days. All right, we'll come back. We'll put a bow on Jaguars today live from Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. People favoriting my tweet that says, I am dumb, Tony.
I'm sure they are.
Why wouldn't you?
Thank you, Lauren.
Why wouldn't you?
I love the crap.
Remember who got drafted in the 2009 draft? Because I apparently
don't. You're welcome.
Okay. Tony was in the mood for some Clash. It'll be the Clash of...
I'm always in the mood for the Clash.
All right. Are you? Really?
I am.
Always?
It's
always.
It's one of my five favorite bands of all time.
Like
yes.
That. Saying a lot. Can you name 10 of their songs?
I'm sure I can.
Okay. I don't want you to. I'm just wondering. I mean, it seems like a lot of songs. I could name like two.
Yeah, most people could.
Yeah.
Most people could name about two.
Yeah. All right. Should I stay or should I go?
That's one.
That's what I got. One in calling.
That's two.
All right, there you go.
There you go.
That's what I got for you.
You don't know this one?
Can't hear it. It's way in the background. Oh, yeah, I do, but I don't know the name of it.
Train in Vain.
Train in Vain. There you go. All right.
Yeah.
Rock the Cat. Of course, Rock the Cat. Bob. Thank you very much, Joe. I was good doing two. I was satisfied with my... I got my two. All right, let's move on. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships presents the Fan Feedback Spotlight for you every day here on Jaguars Today.
Yeah.
And today, Tony, we asked the folks to tweet us at MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, and today at John Osher as well, and tell us which returning Jaguar player has the most to prove. Also, we'll get some responses from the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Tony, what did you come up with?
Well, I got a tally for you here in just a moment, but some of the responses that we got via Twitter, including this one from Doug, he said, Toby, he'll have to prove he is a starting running back and no longer a shadow to AP, hashtag Jaguars Today.
Okay, that doesn't fit the criteria.
Workhorse.
Nice hashtag.
But Dusty said Jokel is one. He has to prove he's going to be the 10-year cornerstone for this team. He will prove it, too. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Nathan, Denard Robinson might have added some weight, but with more depth at the running back spot, he has the most to prove. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Josh said Brewster, prove he could be the center of future. Hashtag Jaguars Today. And Stevie said Branch has to prove that his slight improvement towards the end of last year was real and sustainable. Hashtag Jaguars Today. And as far as a tally for the names that were mentioned, Luke Jokel and Branch mentioned the most.
Okay.
Both of them mentioned six times on this list. Brewster was mentioned three times. Denard Robinson four times. And among the other guys who got mentioned, Alualu, Cecil Shorts, Justin Blackman, Dwayne Grotch, Chad Henne, and Mercedes Lewis.
All right, here we go on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We got Jeff Sappett mentioned Mercedes Lewis. Candace Day said definitely Luke Jokel has so much promise, or he had so much promise, but went out too early to show what he may or may not have been able to do. He definitely will need to show that he is healed and can still be able to deal with the pressure and play some ball go Jags. Jeff Franco said Andre Branch needs to come up big this year. He made some big strides in the second half. Needs to continue to get better or will find himself on the outside looking in. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Like that. Luke Jokel, he has to prove he's the number two overall pick, that he's going to protect the number three overall pick for the next 10 years and make sure we're not picking at number two or number three anymore. That's from Corey Kilmoves McKinney. Jokel, he needs to show he can be the dominant left bookend Dave C. thought he could be, from Sean Corsi. John Shannon said, Brewster, can he be the starting center of the future? Love the show. Appreciate that, John. Clint Alton said, Tyson Alualu has a lot to prove, needs to step up a lot to even make the team. James Potter went with Cecil Shorts. He can be a number one if he would just stay healthy. Again, David Phillips going with Cecil Shorts, needs to prove he can stay healthy. David Staples said, Justin Blackman. The criteria was returning Jaguar players. Well, he needs to prove a lot of things at this point, but I don't think he'll be doing them on the football field.
He needs to prove he can return.
It's a good way of putting it. I'll put that up there with my job is to keep my job.
Yeah.
Isn't that all of our jobs, by the way?
No doubt.
In today's day and age. Bobby Brown went with, I'll say, Andre Branch. Say hi to Ronnie, Bobby, and Mike, or Ronnie, Ricky, and Mike, I guess that would be. Hopefully he can prove we don't need to draft a pass rusher next year. And Luis Osorio said, my opinion is Luke Jokel's second overall pick last year. He's gotten hurt 5 minutes into the start of his career as a left tackle. Needs to come in and show he can stay there. For you, Who tops the list? One guy that has the most to prove as a returning player this year.
I think because of what they invested in him last year and because we saw so little of him at the position, for me it is Luke Jokel. I left out because they're depending so much on that pick working out for this team, for everything else to fall in place on that offense. For me, it's Jokel.
I think probably if I was forced to only pick one, I think Jokel makes the most sense. I think, as we pointed out with John Osher, a lot of these guys have a lot to prove. Mike Brewster says, hey, you know what? I'm going to surprise you. The team went out, tried to sign Alex Mack. You don't fault them for trying to sign the best guy at the position.
No.
You know, unless you have a top five guy at the position. But beyond that, you know, he needs to show that he can man the fort. You know, and we were talking about the offensive line, and people on Twitter were kind of debating which guys are locks to start. And look, I would agree. We all project what the offensive line is right now to be Jokel, Beatles, Brewster at center, Linder to win the starting job as guard, and Pastor on the right side. And I would put a high percentage likelihood on probably four of those five, maybe Brewster the most susceptible to having his job taken. But at the same time, I think the only two that you could write in cement are Jokel and Beatles. Jokel and Beatles can be terrible this offseason. They will be your opening left side of the offensive line. That my point being, I think Pastor will start at right tackle, but if Pastor was terrible, it's not inconceivable because they don't have the same investment in him. I think
right.
The investment in Jokel and Beatles, they could play very poorly, and you're not going to not see them open the season as the starters.
All right. If you're going to put the left side in cement, then Austin Pastor's in ink at the very
He's
least
in
right
ink.
Now.
I'd
right
put him in ink. And to me, Linder is not far behind.
Me either.
Because
yeah.
There's such a hole there and what they've invested to go get him.
Sure. I mean, they move back into the third round to go get him. You would certainly think that he's going to be given the opportunity to be the starter or right guard, if nothing else.
It's curious to me, and unless we overlooked any, that we haven't seen anybody suggest Chad Henne.
We had one.
Did we have one? Okay,
we had one
Henne. One
suggestion of Henne.
All right. Simply, maybe it's because either A, people think that others have more to prove, or B, that they feel like they know who Chad Henne is. And that's that they're not going to get much more than you've seen because Chad Henne has had ample opportunity to, you know, take his game to a higher level, so to speak. People love to use that cliche, the next level.
Sure. And Chad Henne has a lot to prove, as John Osher pointed out early on in the program, maybe not to Jacksonville, but to whoever he's going to be playing for next year or the year after that, where, look, this league, we see it right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick is probably going to be the starter in Houston when everything is said and done at this point in time. We're talking about there are three or four teams every year that are using a guy like Chad Henne to get them to the next stop. And if Chad Henne proves this year that he can be more effective than he's been to this point in his career, then maybe there is another chance for him to start somewhere besides Jacksonville once Blake Bortles is ready to start here. So it is a big year for him, maybe not for Jacksonville going forward especially, but for Chad Henne, he might have the most to prove of anyone on this roster.
In that regard, yeah. And I think if Chad Henne starts 16 games, if Blake Bortles truly is given a year to develop and Chad stays healthy and let's say the majority of the offense stays healthy around him, then I think it's maybe not likely, but maybe it is likely that he sets career highs in some passing areas because the threshold isn't that high. The bar is not that high for him to set, you know, single season bests for TD passes or passing yardage, but it's almost by default. You know, to me, that I really don't think, and I said this last week, I really don't think that we're going to see a quantum leap forward from Chad Henne. Not that
me
it's
either.
Not possible, but, you know, yes, he's got some weapons. Those weapons are going to be incredibly young. They're going to make some mistakes along the way. So Chad's going to make his share of mistakes. Everybody makes their share of mistakes, but you add his up, and if he's making them on this play, and a rookie's running the wrong route on another play, and an offensive lineman misses an assignment on another play, those things add up. You know, you're not chock full of veterans that are proven at a lot of these positions that are you need to make your offense function.
Absolutely. I feel like the team is better than it's been at any point since Chad Henne got here to Jacksonville. I feel like this is the best team that they've had with Chad Henne playing quarterback. That doesn't mean that they're ready to be successful right now. And I think when we talk about the idea for the team being 2015, that part of that is that they have two guys they drafted in the second round playing wide receiver, where the second and third year is when guys usually the light comes on for them. playing that position, where it becomes instinctual what they have to do. We are talking about three positions at the minimum on the offensive line being in flux to some degree right now for this team, that you hope it's being solidified as you go into 2015. And that's when Blake Bortles, who they just drafted at number three, should be stepping into that starting role full-time as well. I mean, a lot of it feels like it should be coming together for 2015, and it's a matter for Chad Henne of how much can he basically pull those guys along, especially in the offensive side of the ball, in 2014, and help them progress instead of having a rookie in there who's trying to learn and looks like a chicken with his head cut off at times. You're hoping that Chad Henne prevents that situation for the offense at any time this year because he is a veteran who understands his offense.
All right, we'll pick one of those respondents and award you a Jaguars Today t-shirt later on today, so watch your social media replies, your notifications there. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asks Jaguar fans, what drives you every day? Let your voice be heard on Facebook.com/Jaguars Today or by tweeting the program, the Fan Feedback Spotlight, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, which includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, Tom Bush Mini. You can visit TomBush.com for more information when you're in the market for your next new or pre-owned vehicle, and follow them on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors. You know, it's first day of OTAs. It is not first day of training camp. It's not the first preseason game. It's certainly not a regular season game, but I am looking forward in a few minutes to heading out to the practice field and watching the full squad out there compete, look for the energy level, see who stands out, particularly in the passing game, because that's what's easiest to spot in these kind of practices. So we'll sign off, but get you ready on the other side with Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, and T-Wig. Well, except for T-Wig, very well rested, Tony.
I know.
Those guys took the day off yesterday. How was the Fat Tony T-Wig collaboration yesterday?
It was
yesterday?
Fun. Had a lot of fun yesterday afternoon.
All right. You were licking your wounds with the Braves.
Oh, my God.
Losing to that sorry squad yesterday. Unbelievable.
6-1.
Unbelievable.
Bunch of clowns.
Tell me about it. All right. We're heading out to practice in a few, but first we'll welcome in XL Primetime on the other side. Thanks to John Osher for stopping by today. Jaguars Today live every day right here from Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.